Welcome to the Brothers Murph Get Smart, a weekly podcast in which two brothers, namely myself, Nick Murphy,
and me, Michael Lee Murphy,
work to get more knowledgeable about this big, beautiful blue marble that we live on and everything inside of it.
And as you guys know, we're here to ask the dumb questions so that you guys don't have to.
So we're here
to fill in those gaps of knowledge.
So you guys can go to parties and be like, oh, I already know about this topic.
Well, do you know how this profession works? Because I do. Because the brothers Murphs very eloquently laid it all out for me on a table, and I was able to sample and nibble at it. Oh yeah, that was delicious.
So knowledge.
Joined with us as always this week, I hijacked the intro.
Yeah, he did.
Is the I'm just gonna go classic, iconic.
Kasey Brown.
Yeah, she is. She's up in here and joining us from Washington D.C. is.
Hey, it's Dylan White.
Yes, it is. And go ahead, Nick. You take it back.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep. Got your back, buddy.
So this week we'll be doing a topic we've done a few times in the past.
We're deep in it now.
Just because it's infinitely large and infinitely interesting. Interesting.
She said the infinite Kasey Brown.
Damn.
The infantile.
Next time.
No.
Banking them for later.
Indeed. Yeah. We are talking about a King Arthur.
Battle.
Mike doing ninja stuff.
It was battle, dude.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about King Arthur. We're going to keep following down this road that we've started on because, again, mm-hmm. it just keeps getting weirder and more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So last episode, we got into the knight in the cart. We got a little bit into Lancelot and his introduction Crouton de Troyes.
Actually, for the purposes of actually starting off, what is his actual name?
His name is actually Crétien de Troyes.
Aforementioned to be Crouton de Troyes.
Crouton de Troyes.
Probably will be referred to as Crouton for the rest of the episode. Likely.
So Crouton de Troyes, he wrote 5 Arthur tales.
Yes.
And Dylan will do a little bit of a recap. But we talked about the knight in the cart, as Nick said, and this introduced Lancelot. And he was like mysterious knight. And then halfway through, it's just like, by the way, I liked Lance a lot. Stab, and then he like banged Guinevere, and then won a bunch of duels. I think that's it, right? We caught up. Good.
Yeah,
pretty much.
And go.
That's a cliff notes.
And Sir Gawain's really slow.
Yeah, Sir Gawain is the he's the knight dedicated to like picnics and having a good time, just a nice leisurely pace. He's a real Sunday rider. You know.
Yeah.
Took his time. So we're gonna do another Crétien de Troyes tale today, correct?
We are, indeed. We are going to do his final tale.
Oh.
The last
number 5.
Yeah.
So like now he's got some momentum going. He's got like Lancelot's up in this.
Quick question, Dylan, were his tales popular in his time? Like did they take off when he was writing them, or was it like 100 years later people were like, "Oh, these are crazy."
No, something that was unusual for the time, Crétien's tales seem to have like taken off immediately.
Wow, okay.
They happen, and particularly this one that we're going to get into as
oh,
well.
Okay.
This one kind of left a bunch of people obsessed in a way that would almost make you a conspiracy theorist in today's world.
What?
Okay. In terms of the reaction that it caused?
Yeah, in terms of the reaction that it caused, you had a lot of like people actually lost their minds about the one that we are about.
All right. Well, let's
the twilight of
Interessante.
The 12th
let's
century.
Let's get right into it. So it opens up on a sparkling pond and Edward Cullen, the knight Edward Cullen coming down. Okay, so let's freaking jump into it, man. I'm pumped.
Okay, awesome.
What are we talking about today?
Yeah.
So today we are talking about the tale of the Percival.
Okay.
It's the final work that Crétien wrote. We don't necessarily know when he died, but it was probably soon after this tale or so.
Okay.
And it is the story of Percival. As you would guess from the name of it, unlike the knight in the cart, there's no ambiguity as to who the main character is or anything like that.
Okay.
It's stated straight in the title. His name is Percival. And it begins with Percival as a sort of like young boy. It's almost that time when you're no longer a boy. You're like basically almost a man, you know, that sort of time. But Percival is raised almost like, think of him like being raised almost the same way that Luke Skywalker was in A New Hope, where he's like, he's raised by his mother, like far away from like everything that's going on, with like the knights and stuff like that. And he's raised that way because his father was a knight, and his father was killed. So his mother is trying to like keep him away from that sort
squash it out of him.
Okay. Exactly.
She's like, you can go stand on that knoll and like look at the moon and all that and the wind, but that's it.
Yeah, you know when like Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru are like talking to each other over like Luke, and they're like, he has too much of his father in him. He's like, that's what I'm afraid of. Yeah. That's Percival. That's him growing up and everything. And he grows up in a way that he doesn't even know that knights exist. That's how
good job, mom.
Yeah,
seriously though.
She's like, there's only days, and she would bring him in before the sun set and would take him back out after the sun rose, and like, there's no nights.
Oh my gosh. Knights.
Oh, it's K-N-I-G-H-T-S. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. You gotta specify because I don't understand. So he's just like, thinks that everyone's a farmer, basically, and like lives quiet rural lives.
Yeah, exactly. Weird. He lives like quiet, normal life, rural lives, away from everyone until one day he encounters a knight. And
was he in a cart?
He was not.
Like, fuck that knight. He's in a cart. I don't know anything about this, but I know you probably should not be in that cart.
Dude, I would love to do like the Marvel cinematic version of Arthurian legend where like all of these characters just like interact together.
So yeah. Lancelot's like Tony Stark and so he runs into a knight and
he runs into a knight and is struck by the beauty of the knight. He's struck by sort of the idea of like the knight in shining armor. This is like, think of it as like this. Obviously there's no historical basis for this, but like think of it as like the legendary knights that we know of from like our ideas of what being a knight was. That's what Percival sees there.
Wow.
And it's almost like shining chrome armor. That's
was
like,
this a known knight, or is this like a knight?
It seems like this is just a random knight.
Okay, cool.
Like not even like a really significant one.
All right.
But ever since encountering that knight, Percival decides that he wants to be a knight against his mother's objections and everything like that. He ends up running away from home and...
What a little asshole, man. As I get older, I have less and less patience for like teenagers who don't listen to their parents. I watch Little Mermaid and I'm like, she's such a jerk. Triton's so right. You're 16. Deal with it.
He's like, I'm going to be a knight. She's like, you're going to go to milking school and that's it. You're going to learn how to milk cows.
Different times. Yeah. Okay. Continue. Yeah.
So he's out. He's out of there.
So he's out of there. And so he goes, as you know, all young men go who want to become knights and everything. He just walks straight up to Camelot and into into the place with the round table and everything, and just like looks Arthur dead set and it's like, hey, I want to be a knight. So how
brazen.
Yeah.
Nice. So you guys got like a form or what?
Exactly. Yeah.
A liability insurance form just in case I get impaled on a tree.
Where you got the horses at? Where do I get one of them? All right, so what is Arthur just like in the middle of a chicken? And he's just like, what?
Yeah, so like basically all these other knights that are like sitting around the round table are like, what's up with this kid right here? You know, this isn't what normally happens when we're, you know, celebrating and stuff. This isn't like a weird green knight that walked in, or Meleagant saying that he kidnapped half the kingdom or something like that. This is just some idiot kid from, you know, like far away who just like comes in and has the audacity. Actually, it's not even audacity. It's more just complete ignorance to say like, hey, I want to be a knight. How do I do that?
Don't you think that that's a little... I just feel like Arthur's forgetting, like, where he came from. Like, he didn't know he came from greatness and blah, blah, blah. And then this kid comes in and is like, I want to be like you. And he's just like, fuck you, kid. That's kind of mean.
He's like, I want to walk like you.
What a hypocrite.
Talk like you.
To be fair, Arthur doesn't come out and say, like, fuck you, kid, and stuff
that's
like that.
That's true, I guess. I'm putting words in his mouth.
That's actually Sir Kay that says that.
Oh, okay. Then I'm not surprised. I'm zero surprised that Kay is upset about this.
Yeah. Kay's like... Douche. Kay basically is like, who's this little bitch right here that, like, comes in? He's, like, weak as hell. He's probably never held a sword in his life. He comes in, wants to be a knight, wants to be like us. Anyway, he, like, taunts this kid, Percival, and stuff.
And for our listeners who haven't heard the other Arthur episodes, this is totally in line with Kay's character. Yeah. He is an asshole.
Yeah.
He's just like, what can you fight? He's just like, I'm really good at fighting the wild dogs on my farm. I wrestle them. I grapple. I'm a good grappler.
You know, it's not impossible. I used the bullseye womp rats in my T-16 back home.
Yes! Oh my god, he is Luke! Yeah.
Again, this is totally who Percival is, right here.
Awesome. So he's got a lot of heart, but not much...
training.
Yeah, or know-how of any kind. Doesn't know that that's not how you sign up. It's just be like, give me a sword then.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was also, like, trained by his mother to be very respectful. You know, she basically tells him whenever he's in, like, different places, not to ask questions about the custom of the land, because that's rude. And you should just learn, you just learn by observing and not, like, speak up or anything like that. So I think I might be portraying him as a bit more brazen, but, like, he actually is, like, very well reserved when, like, doing all of this.
Okay. He's not an a-hole. He's just, you know, he's a kid.
Exactly.
He's earnest and well-meaning.
Yeah,
he's very earnest, very well-meaning, doesn't really know what he's getting into at all, and also a bit afraid to ask questions about that. You know, he doesn't necessarily know you have to ask questions to, like, get better and, like, better yourself and everything like that. Anyway, he gets, like, kind of pushed out of he gets pushed out of Arthur's kingdom. Kind of, and, you know, like, harassed by Sir Kay, who's like, just go away right here. But then he ends up actually killing a knight that's been, like, troubling Arthur.
Sweet.
Yeah, and it's, like, one of those, like, situations where, like, Arthur's, like, he's still not going to be a knight in Arthur's court, necessarily, but Arthur's, like, respect, man. Like, you know, you do this, you're helping out right here and everything, you know, like, you're no longer necessarily that, like, kid that, like, wandered into my court or anything like that.
That's awesome.
And Percival decides, you know, maybe he's not going to be, like, a knight in Arthur's court or anything like that. He's not going to, like, sit at the round table and just get drunk the entire time or anything. But he's going to set out and go on his own adventure. And he doesn't really know what it is, but, like, you guys know, this is the type of world where you take one step and someone's suddenly challenging you to a duel.
Yeah, right. Riding on a quest or something, yeah.
Exactly. So he just knows that, like, you know, he'll find another castle, set up shop, and, you know, he goes on these sorts of adventures, and Kratian's actually very vague as to what these sorts of adventures are, but he definitely gets trained by this more experienced knight, and ends up falling in love and marrying that knight's daughter, or sorry, not daughter, niece. And, you know, they have their own sort of adventures and everything, but where the story really gets interesting is when Percival decides that, you know what, it's time to go home and see my mother. You know, I've been adventuring and stuff. He actually is now, like, a full knight. And everything.
He's legit.
All right, I'm gonna make a prediction. She was taken by Tusken Raiders. Oh, really? Following along Star Wars? Pretty sure
the Jawas have taken her and sold her like, parts.
I killed them all. I slaughtered them in their sleep. That's my Hayden Christensen. Pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so he goes back to see Mama.
Yeah. So he goes back to see his mother, but on the way back to see his mother, he stops and stays for a little while in this castle called Carbonac. And Carbonac is basically, it's ruled over by this guy who's just called the Fisher King.
Cool.
And okay. He's the best fisherman in all the land.
So he exactly. made a king.
Yeah. That's a Star Wars tie-in. He's a Carrie Fisher king.
Hey.
R.I.P. I love it. Love you, girl. Love
so, this appears to be a kind of French pun or so, because my understanding of this is that the word for fish in French is very similar to the word for sin.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, the Fisher King actually never fishes in this story at all. He's not like, it's not like he just loves fishing or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
When the Norse get their hands on this story and you get like the Icelandic Arthurian sagas, they do make him a fisher, and all his scenes take place on the water where he's fishing, because that's the way that the Vikings, like, it wouldn't make sense to the Vikings.
They're all about fishing.
That's
yeah.
where you do exactly. like what they do.
Meetings and things. You're like, okay, let's get on a boat. We got to get out to sea and then we'll talk.
Yeah. Exactly. But in Chrétien's version, he's just called the Fisher King, and that may or may not be a, you know, a pun on, the idea of sin.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
So the Fisher King invites him to his castle, and he stays there, and they have this absolute, like, great feast. Just absolutely wonderful feast. And he's giving him the like service that Percival always hoped that he would have gotten when he first wandered in as a young man at Arthur's court. There. So this is kind of a way of Percival, like, he almost feels like he's
made,
you know,
it.
He's made it. Exactly. You know, this is what it was all about. And then some weird things start happening at the feast. So
weird things in a King Arthur story.
Whoa, 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 whoa. What?
I know.
It's
yeah.
so novel.
So during the feast, there's this weird procession that comes that comes by, and it's just a procession going around the feast, just like moving objects from like one chamber to another, and I think the first object is this bleeding lance. They're carrying the lance, and actually blood is, it's not like the lance just like stabbed someone and there's blood on it. It's like blood is actually flowing from the lance.
Weird.
From the point of the lance. And then some people come carrying a candelabra. There's nothing special about that candelabra. It's just a candelabra. But then finally, this absolutely like gorgeous like maiden comes by, carrying this like very fancy looking grail.
Okay.
And
she got like the first like crunk cup.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Nick was disappointed in that one. Just so everyone is fully aware. I like the Little John reference, Nick, but okay. So she's got a chalice.
Yeah.
A grail, excuse me. Holy yeah. A grail.
And this is like, this is something, this procession is something really weird that Percival is interested in. But yeah. he's been told not to ask questions, so he doesn't speak up about this.
Wow, he's the opposite of my life.
Yeah,
the opposite.
He should be like, "What's that? Is that a lance? Why is it bleeding? What's that? Is that a candelabra? Where's Liberace? Is he behind it? Oh my god, what's over here? Is that a grail? Is that a holy grail? What is that? Is it a chalice? What's in there?"
Yeah,
exactly.
People are just like, "Cool, you're a neat guest."
Anyway, the after this procession passes and Percival doesn't like ask about it or inquire about it or anything, he's just like, okay, you know, I'll see if I'll figure out, you know, some other way, or maybe this will just be like one of those weird things that happens that I shouldn't speak up about. It's the culture of the castle and everything like that. And he just like kind of, the Fisher King is not looking particularly well or anything, so he ends the feast kind of early and just like goes off to bed. Percival goes to sleep, and he's basically woken up during the night because the Fisher King has died.
Oh no.
Suddenly.
Oh lord.
And
that's not good. Did he have too much like mercury poisoning from the fish he was eating?
Raw fish?
Or? All the sushi?
Dude, sashimi that over there, man. I don't want that. Mm.
Look, I mean, like, you shouldn't get the sashimi that comes from this region of the world right here. Like that. This is like the it's Middle Ages.
It was an ahi tuna, and they're like, I think that's a river rock fish.
Yeah.
We call it that because we smacked the heads on the river rocks. Kill him. So he's just dead, iced out.
Yeah.
No, okay.
Yeah, just suddenly dead. And the court the next day, where like Percival is dealing with this and also wondering, like, you know, I am a guest here. The king just suddenly died. Like, what's my responsibility in this whole thing? Like, should I stay or should I go? Type of should situation.
He's like, can I peace out or do I need to make the bed? Like, I don't want to be here for this part. And is he worried that people are like, hey, the king is dead and there's a new dude here. What's up with this guy? Or is he just like, everyone's like, he's fine.
I don't think he's necessarily worried that someone is going to like accuse him of like murdering the king.
Because he's a knight, right?
He's a knight. This honorable is honorable.
Fella. Okay.
And that would be something where like if someone accused him of that, that would be a trial by combat. That'd be a fight right there.
Right, right.
But also like, rules. Yeah, it's a violation of the rules. Everyone's like, no one is speaking up saying he killed the king.
Okay.
Or are they?
Oh no.
He's
the bait and switch me, dog.
Because at the court, this old haggard woman just starts yelling at him about
she just starts going, boo!
She's not accusing him necessarily of killing the king, but what she is accusing him of is failing to ask his host who the Grail served and why the lance bled.
Oh.
And
what's your accurate accusations?
Yeah.
It's like, really, you didn't ask
fair questions to ask.
You didn't ask any questions about that bleeding lance?
You weren't even a little bit curious about the perpetually bleeding lance?
He's like, I was told to be quiet and eat my meals and my grains.
I finished my plate. I almost finished my plate. Okay, so she's just like, that effort didn't ask the right questions.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
And then she basically says, if you had asked these questions, he would have been healed.
What?
Yeah.
Drop a brother a memo. Like, well, mm-hmm. Okay. So does everyone all of a sudden, like, do 50 heads all turn toward him? They'd be like, why didn't you ask about the lance?
Yeah, basically. Weird. And this, by the way, is the really infuriating part of this story. This is the beginning of kind of the mystery of what the Grail is and what it's going to be in Arthurian legend. And basically what happens after this is the story cuts back to Arthur and Camelot. And there's some stuff that there's a little bit of stuff that happens with Sir Gawain. He's challenged in like a duel of honor or so.
This is going to take 3 weeks.
Yeah. And he acts like very honorably as a knight should. And then the story ends. It's incomplete.
This Percival story?
This Percival story.
Oh man. Now, all right. Yeah. Now I can get into like why there's going to be conspiracy theories. So
yeah.
We're like with Percival, crazy shit. And back to Camelot for like 3 seconds. Gawain's like, I guess I'll fight him.
Yeah.
That's all, folks. Like,
one of the reasons why this story is Chrétien de Troyes' last work is it's an incomplete work. He died before he finished it.
Oh my God.
And Lord. So he never explains the answer to the mystery of the Grail.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, he just set up a lot of other authors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, really though. Well, that's insane. like, I'm guessing, or I wonder if this is where the conspiracy theories come out of, like, was that on purpose to create this, like, never ending, like, what is it? What's the Grail Society? What is it? Why did it bleed? Like, all the, you know.
No, people just got obsessed with the Grail and what it was supposed to be. And there are literally, and this is almost unheard of in this time, there are literally like 4 or 5 different writers writing from around the same time, like a little bit after Kraytheon, that try to just add on to.
It's like fan fiction. It's like the first fan fiction.
Yeah, really, though.
Exactly. And they all go in completely different ways, and they all kind of focus on this mystery of trying to figure out what the Grail was.
At this point, though, it's just a Grail. It's not the Holy Grail it's not, we would come to know it as.
Exactly. Eventually. It's not the Holy Grail yet. This is just a Grail. And Grails were pretty common at this point as well. There'd be nothing particularly impressive about a Grail. It's just that this mystery of this Grail.
And that's so interesting that the writers around who kind of tried to like finish the story or continue the story, like all focus on the Grail. Cause like, to me, like I would focus on the Bleeding Lance. Like that seems like such the more interesting of the three things between the candelabra, the Grail. Like, isn't you have like, a candlestick, a fancy cup, but then a lance that's constantly bleeding. Yeah. Like would you focus like, let's focus on the cup.
Yeah. So the lance is interesting because I think the lance is the reason why the Grail kind of slowly became the Holy Grail. Because there were certain writers that kind of focused on that lance and decided that that lance was the lance that stabbed Jesus during the crucifixion.
And then that was kind of
how they connected it to this idea of the Holy Grail must have been like the cup that Christ had or so.
But when Crouton was writing, Dylan, he wasn't writing this necessarily from a Christian point of view, correct?
Well, he was Christian,
but it wasn't sure. Like the heavy Christian overtones that Arthur came to be. So was it?
Well, I mean, this is the point where everyone who's writing and reading Arthurian legend is definitely Christian, and Arthur, all the characters in Arthurian legend are Christian as well.
Okay. So these conclusions are pretty logical jumps.
Yeah, exactly. And anyone who was writing after this time was Christian as well. When they write in the Holy Grail was the cup of Christ and stuff like that, it's not an irrational assumption.
Sure. Okay.
But it's not like Geoffrey of Monmouth time, and then that would like make no sense because they're coming from like Celtic lore.
Yeah. This Geoffrey of Monmouth was also Christian. You're talking about like before him,
Story. Yeah, like it's not like that anymore. It's like pretty firmly established in the faith here. Yes. Okay.
There's lots of different theories about this, and this is the beginning of literally conspiracy theorists driving themselves insane. It all comes from this one incomplete story that never bothers to answer the question of like, what the hell is the Grail? And actually Arthurian scholars have been also obsessed with this story and where the Grail came from. And you'll hear answers as extreme as the Grail was a remnant of an older story about a cauldron of plenty, in Welsh pagan sources. And you'll hear stories that the Grail was influenced by Muslim Sufi mystics trying to like figure out like the answer to alchemy as well.
Interesting.
So people just go kind of crazy trying to figure that out. And the simple answer is we'll never know. He died, and we'll never
dig him up and let's zap him like Frankenstein and ask, man. Like, what's the deal? I need to know.
Seriously. Are you like, because I know you're pretty obsessed with Arthur, obviously.
Yeah, what's your theory?
But are you like, if you could go back to any point in time in history, would it be like right before Crouton died and be like, what is the Grail?
No, I mean, personally, me, I'm more interested in was there a historic King Arthur than I am in
okay,
necessarily what his interest in the Grail
fantastical
was.
King Arthur. But if you could make a pit stop, you'd hang with Crouton too.
If I made a pit stop, I would definitely ask him about the Grail. Right,
but would you bring Crouton to be like, these are named after you?
You're famous now.
You're famous.
You are delicious
in grocery stores.
Sometimes these have ranch on them,
and it's soup plantations.
You know what, man? I'm gonna jump on the conspiracy train.
Yeah.
I think that he lived beyond the end and release of that story, and he just took off, and he's just like, I'm finna leave it right here for y'all. And just what he wanted to see, like, his whole legend and everything blow up. It was the smartest thing he could have done.
Yeah,
just
really
die
well.
Before he finished.
Yeah.
Because all these years later, they're still like, what was the Grail? And there's so many things that have been made, parody and otherwise, that, you know, have this Holy Grail or this, you know, just trying to answer the question or come up with your own theories and stuff. So I think he just skipped town. He went to Barbados, hung out, and he just left it there.
Went to Elba. You'll wait for Napoleon.
That was a deep cut.
Yeah.
Like, too smart for your own damn good.
Frankion is playing the really long game.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple hundred years, you know.
That's crazy. So what do you think, Dylan? Do you have a theory? Or do you believe what the most people believe?
I think if I have a theory on what Kratian was trying to say with the Grail and everything.
Yeah.
So I kind of think that he gets the Grail from earlier Welsh sources. There are some weird poems that I believe are in either the Book of Taliesin or the Black Book of Carmarthen. I don't know.
Both stories I love.
Yeah.
Read them cover to cover, but the back to the front.
But there is a weird poem, a weird Welsh poem that is nowhere similar to this, but it's this weird poem about Arthur leading his knights to this mystical world to find some sort of cauldron that is like boiling up like blood and stuff. And his knights, like almost all of his knights die.
Jeez.
In this search for this one weird mystical cauldron.
Hmm.
In fact, like the poem keeps refraining of all that left, only seven remained. You know, sort of
wow.
thing. And I mean, it's a very bleak poem. You this is the type of poem that's only written by people that are being genocided at the time
Aww.
That they're writing.
Yeah.
It's a poem of just absolute death, and this weird cauldron is this weird, mysterious source of life within that. A lot of people have suggested that this poem is a early reference to what would become the Grail story.
Okay.
I don't think that there's necessarily enough evidence to say absolutely that's true. But I also think that there's enough evidence to at least consider that as a possibility.
Yeah.
I'm also interested in the claims that the Grail is somehow related to like Sufi alchemy practices.
Yeah, that's dope.
That's something that like Sufism, I don't necessarily know enough about myself, but the way that theorists have described this, again, seems pretty compelling to me. Especially since Kratian's writing at a time when sharing between the East and West, you know, in like people around him would have at least known of some religious teachings and alchemy, you know, like knowledge that was coming over from Islam because the Crusades were happening at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
Cool.
So again, that's also something that's possible. Another version of this is simply that Kratian might have just made it up. And it's the same way that people are driven insane trying to find where he got the answer to, you know, where he came up with the character Lancelot from. And if there's an earlier story with Lancelot or something like that, maybe Kratian was just a remarkably brilliant and creative personality himself. And maybe a lot of these stories are just things that he is dreaming up as he's writing, which is unusual for this period of medieval literature. But I mean, we've also seen times where Geoffrey of Monmouth, a lot of what he wrote in History of the Kings of Britain, a lot of that seems like stuff that there's no basis for as well. So it might have been that a lot more people were making up these stories and then claiming that they came from some source.
Just a picture of him is resentful toward everyone. They're like, where'd he come up with it? And he's just like, bro, look right here in the old noodle. Like, you never just made up a name for like a rock. And they're like, well, that rock is based off this character. And that my pet is based off that. And they're like, just come up with your own thing, man.
Yeah.
You bunch of bing bongs. That's why he fled. He's just like, I'm over it.
I went to Barbados.
People can't handle it. They can't handle my creativity. They think it's, you know. I'm stealing or whatever. I'm out.
Can I just say, I love the mythology of Kraytheon's own life that we are 100% just inventing now.
Dude, Crouton would be proud.
We're taking a leaf out of his book.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's just like,
possibly.
Respect.
Crouton de Troyes.
And then Lancelot came and banged his wife.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So I imagine there's a lot of stories that now come starring Percival.
Oh, yeah.
And this Grail.
Percival becomes suddenly from just a lowly sort of guy who no one takes seriously. Because of this story, he becomes like one of the greatest knights in Arthur's court.
Wow.
He is one of the three that go on like the Grail quest in later stories.
Oh, cool.
And a lot of writers like Robert de Boron took the Percival story and just spun it off into absolutely marvelous and really weird stories as well. And I would go on about this, but this is the majority of what my quiz is about. So maybe we should just get into the quiz, and then if we want to talk about some of these like stories afterwards, we absolutely can.
Let's do it, but I think right there is a perfect time to get up into this.
Quiz! Pop quiz! It's time for the pop quiz! Quiz! Pop quiz! We'll laugh when Nick loses! Pop quiz!
Oh, yeah. You heard it there, folks.
That's my run. I went to tell you on a quiz run.
To freaking, like, letting it ride.
Yeah.
Letting it ride. It is time indeed for the pop quiz, since you've teased us so wonderfully. So what do you got for us, man? Like, what's
Muy curioso.
I've been holding my tongue because there's something I wanted to bring up that like is interesting, but I didn't want to accidentally,
like I did last night,
step on a pop quiz. So go ahead, sir. Take it away.
Okay. Sounds good. As you can tell from this story, Percival never attains the Grail or understands the mystery behind it in this story.
Which made me mad. He's just like, rather than ask, like, maybe I'll just go and have a think and it'll come to me. Like, why do you think that would happen?
To give a bit of think.
Anyway, so yes, he doesn't understand the Grail.
Yeah. But in later tradition, there is a knight who does and attains the Grail, and its questions are answered. And I'm wondering if you want to take a stab at who that knight is.
Oh, is it from Arthur's court?
It is from Arthur's court. He's
I'm going to guess Galahad, because he was always the answer. He seems like he's always the answer. I'm guessing Galahad.
Sir Robin.
You know what? You guys are all wrong. Sir Kay has redeemed himself.
Yes!
By finding the Grail.
And then just drank out of it.
Drank out of it.
Hammer drunk one
until
night.
He got really pissed off. He threw it against a wall and it shattered.
Smashed it. Is that right?
So, Sergei.
You know you are. You're Sergei. He's like, what'd you say to me?
Sergei unfortunately never finds the Grail.
You don't know anything about Arthur.
He claimed that he found it like 10 times. Like, yeah. Found this dope Grail. And they're like, that's just a clay cup. Like, it's always a clay cup.
It's the same clay cup you've had for 40 years.
He's like, if it's clay, then can it do this? He just smashes it every time. And you're like, yeah. Okay, so it's not Sir Kay, but brave Sir Robin.
And Sir Robin, unfortunately, I believe, is a complete invention of Monty Python.
Oh, really? Excuse me.
I didn't know that.
I beg to differ. He is brave, brave, brave Sir Robin.
Bravely bold Sir Robin.
I also was wondering, as I said, I'm like, he's probably not real.
One of the most disappointing parts of getting into Arthurian legend is I passionately wanted to know who Sir Robin was.
And why was he so brave?
Yeah.
Not a thing.
All the things that happened to him.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Wow.
What about Galahad, though?
Galahad is the one.
Aha! Yeah. Knew it. He was perfect. Right. He's a perfect knight. That's what we learned last time. So.
It's just proving that this podcast is working, you guys, because we did not even know Galahad was, I just assumed he was like of the same age as Lancelot. It's like he's Lancelot's son. He's like a super knight. And now because we did that, we are smarter. To be fair, Casey is the one who answered correctly, and we continue to be jackasses like usual.
It's true.
But the point is we're getting better, you guys.
Yay.
Alrighty, nice. Alrighty. Listen, Dylan, hit us with another.
Okay. In Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, they tell the story that three knights set out and two returned. But one of them had attained the Holy Grail. That actually is a story that stems directly back from Arthurian legend. Okay. And I'm wondering if you guys want to take a stab at who were those three knights.
Who?
Yeah.
So three went, two came back, and one of them had the grail?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Percival.
Percival
is
one.
Three.
Yeah.
You can we all have the name three?
No, you name Percival. We'll come up with a trio.
I'll make the question easier. Okay. You've already guessed Percival and Galahad.
Yeah.
There. So we're really looking for who else? Like who?
Of the third one?
Them.
Okay.
Yeah. Who accompanied them on that mission?
Kit.
Kit?
From Knight Rider.
I was going to say from Knight Rider.
Yay! I'm going to go Gawain, dude.
Come on.
Finally got his shit together.
I'm going to go Tom Cruise from the movie Night and Day.
Oh there my you go. God.
Casey?
A fucking King Arthur went.
Oh.
I don't know.
Okay.
Finally did some work.
Yeah.
So none of you are right.
Sweet.
Tight.
Classic.
Sir K.
Sir K.
It's for sure Sir K.
Although, to be fair, I do think that Sir Gawain did go on a grail quest at one point or another in
I'll take the half stories. Point. If that's what you give me.
Numerous knights have gone on grail quests in Arthurian legend, Lancelot being one. I think Gawain was one as well. But the three that are most famous, the three that like really did the Grail quest well, was Sir Percival, Sweet. Sir Galahad, who Sweet. Ends up attaining it, and okay. the final one is Sir Bors.
Who's that? We never even talked about him.
Sir Bors is kind of like a Falstaffian character. He's like a big guy, like plays music, gets drunk, they smoke weed.
Sir Bors, what is?
They didn't talk about him because like he name. Bores me. Casey.
He's like, I've read a great manual on cart assembly over the weekend. And,
who's Sir Bors, Dylan?
Sir Bors is only known for going after the Grail. He's not
like a Russian guy.
Yeah,
I'm Sir Bors. He's,
actually,
I make look a Grail.
If you remember the King Arthur movie with Clive Owen.
Yeah.
So Sir Bors is like the big family man type guy that like, loves getting drunk and like fucking his wife and you know like that sort of character. I think Mike
is pretty close.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah, half point. I'll give you half point
for the Falstaff thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See, I wasn't too far off. I mean, so you can tell from the name what kind of guy he is. He likes to party.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't.
Yeah, I don't think he's actually like that in the stories themselves, but in
the Clive Owen tale is the definitive tale.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Did you have another question, or was that it? Did we fucking
I have another question as well. So
with it, do.
So one of the pinnacle pieces of literature to come out of medieval Germany at this time, is based directly on the story of Percival. It's actually called the Percival. Which is the German way of saying it.
The Percival.
It's written by this guy named Wolfram von Eschenbach.
Dope.
Yeah.
Of course it was.
who also had a bit of an ego himself. He writes this long prologue about how this is the most amazing poem in the German language.
That's awesome.
And about how he is undoubtedly the greatest poet of his age and possibly of all time.
Wow.
He does happen to be right about that, but, you know, it is annoying that he's right about that.
Let other people say it for you, you know? Yeah. You don't have to just... Yeah. Like, here's a prompt for you guys if you need some stuff to say about me.
Anyway.
Wolfram.
Anyway, Wolfram Von Eschenbach's grail, the thing that Percival searches after and can't find the mystery of, isn't a cup. It isn't a chalice or anything in his version.
Oh, gosh.
It's something else entirely. Do you want to take a complete wild guess as to what it is?
Hell yeah, dude. It's a fucking living fennel fox.
What?
Stab in the dark.
I think that his grail is really his inside him. He needs to just like listen to the Lady of the Lake and find,
find his grail.
I think it's like a metaphor for his destiny.
I'm gonna go with his grail is a lady.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a good smart guess.
So the grail is actually this mysterious fox that's
you shitting me?
Dude, don't fuck with me, dude.
No, it's not true. No, no, no,
oh my god, Dylan. I was like, Mike just took the wildest guess.
That would have been so awesome.
I was about to be stoked.
He literally almost got out of his chair.
Because I was like, I said fennel fox, but it's an actual fox.
Okay, so what is it then? Good, nice, well played.
The grail is a meteor in his story.
What?
Yeah, it is a mysterious rock that fell from the heavens.
It's like Superman. It's kryptonite. Yeah. That's so random and cool. Weird.
Yeah.
So no one was right.
No one was right.
That is pretty damn different from a cup. Yeah, I was never going to guess that, a meteor.
No, that's so weird.
But what is a meteor but the foxes of space? Except we think about it deeply.
Yeah.
Well, damn, dude. Well, thanks for freaking setting us off into the land of obsession here with
Percival. Open possibilities. Yeah,
wow, that's wild. I did not expect that that's how that was all going to go down.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. And it makes sense why people kind of keep digging into the idea of this you know, holy grail, this device, this item mm-hmm. that, depending on what you want your legend to be, gives you basically whatever you want. It's kind of
it's find your grail.
Yes.
Mark, what is the grail to you?
Spamalot is right.
Great show.
You know what's interesting as well, and this is something that I'm a bad storyteller. I completely forgot to bring this up when Percival goes to the castle of Carbonac. Uh-huh. It's the surrounding area is described as an absolute wasteland. And so it's not just the king that it's unhealthy. It's the land itself that is unhealthy as well.
Oh my God.
And if we want to look at like the inspiration that the grail has had in our culture, I mean, obviously we have like Indiana Jones is like, he literally goes after the grail. We have like all the Arthur stories and stuff, but there's some adaptations that people generally don't even think about. So when I described like the land as a wasteland, that's actually part of the inspiration behind T.S. Eliot's poem The Wasteland. Is about, I mean, his idea was the idea of after World War I, but using that Arthurian description of the grail of the wasteland that the Fisher King lives
cool.
in.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Interesting.
Did not know. So again, people have been drawing from these stories for hundreds of years, and then they will continue to do it in either blatant ways or very subtle ways and little nods.
Exactly. Well, what's really interesting about the grail is that it's become something even in some ways larger than just Arthurian legend.
Sure.
Like it's become something that It's become something that transcends the legend to be an entirely different thing in itself.
Yeah, absolutely has. And that's kind of cool. Whether or not that was ever going to be the plan, people take what they want and they hang on to whatever they want.
Yeah.
I just wonder if Crouton's like, I'm down with that. Or he's just like, it was just going to be this little thing. It was going to be this joke.
Right.
Whatever. It was just supposed to be a refilling wine cup. It was like a gag. Because he was going to go real farcical with it. There's going to, like, basically Spamalot was going to happen regardless. Yeah, there's actually, like, you know, an outline left over.
Killer Bunnies.
And then, you know, the Monty Python people got that. And then they went from there. So, yeah, Killer Bunnies was going to be a huge story.
It's also why I think that Monty Python's Holy Grail is exceptionally profound over the fact that they never get the Grail at the end.
Yeah.
Because that's the way that the original story ended.
Yeah. Right, yeah. They're the only ones that have balls enough to be accurate to the story, god damn it.
It's why I maintain that Monty Python's Holy Grail is one of the most accurate Arthurian legends.
Yeah, right?
Dude, thank you so much for that, man. That was super cool.
Absolutely.
And one thing before we do get out of here, I just want to take one moment to say thank you to one of our listeners. This guy is always responding on social media and just being a really good fan of ours. We want to acknowledge Scott Jones, bringer of bones, slayer of crones, fan of the Deftones, and many more things as well.
Yeah, no big deal.
You know what is a big deal? You guys going onto your iTunes right now and rating and reviewing us.
Huge deal, man.
Huge deal.
Big deal.
As much of a big deal as Crouton inventing Lancelot and the Grail, I would argue.
That is true.
Just do it right now, guys. Real quick. Just real quick. Go to your phone and rate, review us. 5 stars if you like us. 5 stars if you hate us. And we'll know what it means. We'll infer. We'll psychically tell which one you meant.
Every 5-star rating that comes in right now will receive your own Holy Grail.
Yep.
We'll go quest for one and we'll have it mailed and delivered to you right away. It might just be a clay cup, guys. We're not actually going to give them a grail. We're just going to give them clay cups.
Yeah.
And they can smash them out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be a good deal. So just give us a 5-star review on our iTunes. Thank you so much,
guys. Or whatever
it really
your podcast app of choice is.
Yeah. And you can also find us on any and all forms of social media, Twitters and Instagrams and Facebooks and Pinterests and all these kind of things. You can always just search the Brothers Murph. We will pop up. There are not too many names like that.
No.
So we'll pop up. We post a lot of cool content on there. We also have a Patreon account if you want to contribute to our show and help us, you know, purchase things like mics and stuff like that. That's what it always goes to.
They're looking for a replacement for me.
Because my name is hilarious. We're trying to get Eddie Murph, I think is his name.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Better, different Murphy.
Yeah. Wouldn't mind, man. I'll listen to that show. So thank you guys for that. We really do appreciate it. It really helps us out. And I guess for now, I have been Michael Lee Murphy.
I've been Nick Maffei.
Casey Brown.
It's Dylan White.
And we are imploring you, as always, to stay
curious.
Dude, man, that ever-bleeding Lance, though, came in. Is that what, like, Lance Bass is about? Because he's a bleeding heart.
Romance.
Let's do that.